Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 172 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling The Whys and Wherefores of Wheat Prices. WSU economist Randy Fortenberry sets the scene, too. From a presentation Fortenberry gave during the Pacific Northwest Farm Forum held February 5, 2020 in downtown Spokane. Fortenberry is a great speaker, and combined with a keen intellect, he makes what could be boring presentations into exciting affairs. Well, exciting to me and those in his audience for whom wheat is their lifeblood. And I'm always learning some fascinating tidbit that helps me understand what's happening in the market, like the fact it's not just wheat acreage that's been declining in the U.S., but in fact a lot of principal crops have declining acreage. Listen ahead for the explanation why. I also found Fortenberry's comment that farm profits are 10% ahead of last year puzzling until he clarified that it depends upon the sector you're in and where you are in the country. But as you'll hear, Fortenberry believes there needs to be reductions in production relative to production capacity to really see any kind of price bump, and where is that going to come from?
Let's talk about wheat. For the U.S., the wheat balance sheet is really improved this year. Look at that second to the last number. That's the carryout. That's what we have left over on May 31st. Less than a billion bushels. That's a very positive carryout. Now, normally you would think the smaller the stocks of whatever it is you have, the higher the price should be. So we're going to have relatively small carryout, stocks left over at the end of the year to add to whatever we harvest next summer and fall, and yet the price, $4.55 a bushel, that's the national average price across all classes, all producers. That's the price that determines whether you do or don't get a PLC payment, for example, in the government program. That's a very low price relative to the previous several years. How can our balance sheet improve and our price deteriorate? Well, it's because it's a world market. Wheat's grown everywhere. And what happens to the wheat price in the U.S. is more affected by what happens in other countries than by just the U.S. itself. If this was a corn picture where we control maybe 40 or 45% of the world trade in corn, a balance sheet improvement in the U.S. means a positive price improvement in the U.S. The problem is we have a balance sheet improvement in wheat, and I'll show you this in a minute, but the world does not. So we're still going to have relatively low wheat prices, even though we're improving. This is still good news, though, because if we were going to grow our stocks also, that would be added to world stocks. World stocks would go up even more than they currently are projected to, and that'd be even more price negative than the current picture that you see here. What I will tell you is I think this is sort of a bottom for right now. So I think as we move forward, wheat prices will look a little better than this marketing year average price. And in fact, over the last several weeks, we've had some nice movement in the wheat market. One thing that really seems contradictory is we've been dropping wheat acres for years. So if wheat acres are going down in the U.S. and the balance sheet is improving, how can prices be deteriorating? Well, it turns out that it's not just wheat acres that have fallen, but principal crop acres in general have been going down. See the big drop for 2019, you're thinking, where'd those acres go? Well, Montana has become a very large industrial hemp producer. That's not a principal crop. A couple years ago, they really worked heavily to produce lentils. So what we're seeing is some transition. These acres haven't disappeared, but they're going from what we call traditional principal crops into some alternative crops. Oregon's growing a lot of hemp. We're not yet, but we probably will. We were just a little behind on the policy ball, sort of getting the rules all put in place about what you have to do to be a commercial hemp producer in Washington, and we're a little behind on processing capacity. But other states are growing quite quickly. These acres aren't disappearing from agricultural production, but they're going into non-traditional crops, things that might be traditional crops in 5 or 6 years, but some of the wheat acres are doing the same thing. If you look at USDA's long-term forecast, they're telling us we're going to have about 46 million acres of wheat going forward. 7 years ago, it was as high as 60 million. So they're really calling it for flattening out of wheat acres going forward. The harvested acres, we harvest about 82 to 85% of the wheat we plant. What happens to the ones that don't get harvested? Well, we lose some acres from weather. Some gets grazed off in the southeast and doesn't end up not producing a wheat crop if it's overgrazed. There's different places it disappears. The harvested acres are wheat harvested acres of wheat for grain. So some of the planted acres that disappear when we get to the harvested acres. Why are they calling it flat? What USDA is basically doing is looking at just the trajectory of what's happened in the past. So they're discounting this drop we've had over the last 5 or 6 years. But the way you should look at this is sort of an expectation if nothing changes on the price side. So the price between corn and wheat remains the same. In North Dakota, we can move a lot of hard red spring into corn or corn into hard red spring as relative prices change. This assumes there's no change in those relative prices. This assumes wheat prices sort of are break even nationally as we go forward, sort of that $5 to $5.50 price range. So this really is a baseline to consider. It might change next week at the USDA Outlook Forum, but this is what the USDA currently projects. Why does this matter? Well, we're still going to have yield increases, which means production's going to go up. About 45% of all the wheat we produce goes to the international market. So when we have trade problems in wheat, it really has a negative impact on U.S. prices. This shows the forecast for this year, 2019-20, so this will be the year that ends May 31st of 20. About 2.1 billion bushels of wheat totally consumed, 975 million of that consumed offshore. So the exports matter. What happens in our market is, once we kind of know what the crop is, late summer, early fall, what really drives price is export activity. When we underestimate exports and we start to see them move more aggressively than we thought, wheat prices will go up. If we overestimate them and exports are moving slower than we thought, wheat prices will go down. There's very little change in domestic demand in the U.S. from 1 year to the next. All the activity, all the volatility tends to come from the export market. And this is why that's really important. If we're not going to export almost half our wheat, then what happens is total consumption comes down. Stocks for the next year go up. We have more left over at the end of the year, all because the export market didn't take what we needed them to take to maintain this level of consumption. Here's the good news for this year, and this explains why we've had a nice movement over the last 8 weeks or so in the wheat market, last week notwithstanding. So what this graph shows is the blue bar is September 1st forecast from USDA of exports for the marketing year. Marketing year is from June to May. So this is at the start of the second quarter. What are we going to export by the end of the year? The green hatch bar, is it green or is it red? No, the red hatch bar is what we really exported. So what you'll see is over the last 6 or 7 years, they've almost always been too optimistic. And you might recall that as we've gone through the fall and early winter the last several years, prices just continue to deteriorate. So if you're storing wheat, you're getting depressed because the price is going down. Storage costs are still accumulating. And then sometimes back later, like March or so, we might get a reprieve and we get a return. Well, what's driving that mostly is the weekly export number we get from USDA isn't matching their export forecast. In fact, last year, they didn't even adjust it until March. And then the market got hammered because all of a sudden they said, we're not going to be anywhere near where we thought we were going to be based on the export pace. This year, it's been the opposite. So that green hatch bar is their November forecast. So it was lower than September. But the current forecast is now all the way back to September 1. We started out at like a 903 million bushel forecast. We're now at 975. And in fact, as I said earlier, I actually think that number's too low and exports will go up. So what's supported prices this year is this improvement in the export picture on a weekly basis relative to the annual forecast USDA has had. This is USDA's forecast of, for the next 10 years, percent of total wheat use as an export. And again, 45 to 46%. If we don't maintain that, that's very price negative. If we do better than that, that's very price positive. What drives that price volatility is this export picture. This is where we are this year. So these lines all show, I'm looking at the weekly shipments. How much got shipped each week, and I added to the previous weeks, so we get the cumulative sales through the year. So the black line is where we were this year up through October. And notice that we were doing much better than last year. We were kind of matching the previous 2 years. That blue dashed line, that was over a billion bushels in exports. So as of last week, I have that 577 up there. We are, through January of this year, we have outpaced every year for the last 3 years. One of those years was over 1 billion bushels in exports, so if we can maintain this, we actually can have a very positive export picture this year. And if we continue to do that, even though we've had a setback in the futures market here the last few days, we could continue to add value to the U.S. wheat market until or unless USDA finally ups their annual forecast something closer to 1 billion bushels. So that's the positive side of the wheat market going forward. So the interesting thing is we have the lowest marketing year average price for the whole year, and yet we have a nice rally, or we have had a nice rally, and higher wheat price expectations going forward. How can those things be reconciled? That marketing year average price that was on the balance sheet, that price is weighted each month by the amount of wheat sold. So if we sell a lot early at low prices, then even a big rally late in the marketing year doesn't raise that price that USDA uses to determine your PLC payment. And that's what happened this year. We sold a lot of wheat early, so even if we rally to $6, that price still isn't going to rise to the point that PLC payments won't be made, because we can't get now, with the amount of volume left to sell, a price above $5.50, which is the PLC trigger. This is those marketing year average prices. So what this shows you is what they've done each year for the last several years. That 470 that's up there, that's what USDA was forecasting in November, and the 455 is what came out in January. So they continue to lower this marketing year average national price, even as the futures market is rallying, and we're seeing cash prices in Washington improve until the last several days, over the last 6 or 8 weeks. And again, those two things can be reconciled, because the first one is based on sales, and much of the sales happened early in the year. This is USDA's forecast for prices over the next 10 years. The positive part of this is the lowest price this year, that 455. The really negative part of it is we never get to 550 over the next 10 years. Now, the way this price should be interpreted, this is a worst-case scenario, because what USDA assumes is everybody has a great crop, everybody's trend yields continue to improve, those acres never change. For us, it's 46 million acres, okay? So if everybody produces at near full capacity, this is what prices do. Well, for that to happen over 10 years is pretty unlikely. However, we've had several years of really good crops internationally, and even when we've had a problem, it hasn't been enough to move the price a lot. So it's going to take a big disaster somewhere, I think, to make this look a lot better. But at least it sort of should be viewed as a worst-case scenario. Australia, for example, all the fires, mostly what that's affected so far is livestock and pasture. So their wheat crop is going to be smaller this year because they had a big drought, but it didn't burn up in the fires. So even though they're going to have a smaller crop, it hasn't been enough to move the market to significantly higher prices. We need something to happen more dramatic than that to sort of make this the worst-case scenario and see improvement as we go forward. This, again, will be updated at this Ag Forum here in a week or two, and we'll see what they come up with, but I don't think it's going to change a lot. The good news for us in Washington is we've been doing better than the rest of the country. So we have, last year and this year, highest prices in the last 4 years. That's not true most wheat-producing areas. So even though prices here are not attractive, relative to everybody else, we're actually not doing too bad, and that's, I don't know, that's something maybe just keep in mind as we move forward. It could be worse than it is for some people. Here's what the futures looked like a year ago. So February is up there at like, $580 a bushel? $545 a bushel. And then as we left February and went into the winter and into the spring and at the end of the marketing year, we lost 90 cents. And that's exactly what I mentioned before. USDA last year was very stubborn about revising their export number, and when they finally did, the market fell apart because it became very clear they'd been grossly overly optimistic about where we were going to go. This year, so far, it's been the exact opposite. That's good news. And again, I still think, despite the decline in prices the last few days, they're still overly pessimistic about where exports are going to go, so I think there's still room for this chart to improve over the next 3 or 4 weeks, maybe the next month or two, as they adjust their expectation. That next export number will come out next week. February 11th will be the next World Ag Supply Demand Estimates that USDA throws out. They'll update this export number, and if it's positive, that should be good for the market going forward. This shows why we were able to rally, and this shows what exports have done for us this year. So that red bar, so that the blue bar is how much total wheat do we have available to us starting on June 1st, plus what we think we're going to produce or harvest that summer. The red bar is how much do we have on September 1st. So the first quarter of the marketing year is over. The blue bar underneath the red bar is what do we have on December 1st. If you look at the difference between those, it's usually a very consistent amount of wheat that disappears between September 1st and December 1st, except this year. And that's because exports were doing so much better on a weekly basis than they have in the past. And suddenly by December 1st, there was a lot less wheat available to us than we thought there was going to be back in September, October, and November. And that's why in January and February and December, we've had a nice rally in the futures market. The question is, what happens to the yellow bar? That'll be what we have on March 1st, and we'll be told that at the end of March. If the yellow bar drops like the blue one did, that's still going to be very price positive, but if it suddenly goes flat, and it turns out we had all this export activity early, and then it sort of drops off, that's what the risk is to the market, and that won't be a price positive event if that's what actually happens. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but that is a possibility. $5.53, that's what the price is right now for July 2020 futures. When you buy revenue crop insurance, okay, what the USDA does is they discover a wheat price back in September for winter wheat, and they guarantee you that price for harvest. And then the way they figure out what the insurance policy ought to cost is they look at the options market for wheat. The more expensive an option is to buy or sell a wheat futures contract, the more risk the market says that the price is going to change, and the more expensive crop insurance will be. Okay? The lower the price of the option, the less risk the market sees that prices are going to change a lot going forward, and the cheaper crop insurance is. So they have a formula they use to sort of calculate that. So I did the same thing here, and here's what this actually shows. If you look at the $5.53 price, that's on the bottom, and you go to the left-hand side, you'll see 50%. And that sort of says, well, traders think between tomorrow and the next day, there's a 50% chance the price will go up or it'll go down. That makes sense, right? We don't really know what's going to happen tomorrow. But what matters are these tails. So if you look at these tails, what the traders are saying right now is they believe there's like a 20% chance, only a 20% chance the price will be below $5. But there's also only about a 30% chance it could be above $6. So what the market's telling us is they kind of believe the price for the remainder of the marketing year is going to be between $5 and $6. How would we interpret that? Well, as we're moving forward, if there's no fundamental change in the balance sheet, the export number doesn't change next week, and we see futures drifting towards $6, that might be a sales opportunity for wheat that we're going to harvest next summer, because the market's kind of telling us it's going to be pretty unlikely we get above that unless there's some huge change in market conditions that we don't anticipate. On the other hand, if we drift down towards $5, it probably says we can afford to be patient. There's no reason to panic and sell now, even though we've drifted down, because unless there's a fundamental change in the market, one of these trade deals blows up, or something else happens that's price negative, we probably can't go much below $5. So that's kind of how I interpret this. I start watching this about February, and it's going to change a little bit every day, but unless the market moves by like 50 cents a bushel in the futures, it doesn't change a lot every day. And it sort of gives you an idea of what's your risk of significantly lower prices and significantly higher prices. And right now, I would categorize this to say the expected price range, given the current market conditions and the stability in the trade, is going to be about plus or minus 50 cents a bushel from where we are now. What's going to drive that is this. If you look at those two top bars, so again, the U.S. balance sheet's improved, stocks are down, but that blue bar is world production and the orange bar is world consumption. Last year, consumption exceeded production and world stocks came down. But this year we're going right back to the trend we've had for a long time, more production than consumption. So even though our balance sheet looks positive, the world one doesn't. And that explains why we're going to have lower prices this year for the marketing year average than we have in the past. What really matters is world production. Those two bars to the right, one of them is total world stocks, but the other one is world stocks without China, because as I said before, China doesn't trade much wheat. What really matters is what are the stocks in non-China countries that can be traded on the world market. When those grow, that's price negative for U.S. markets. When those grow, stocks outside of China grows, that's price negative for U.S. markets. Then this shows that relationship. World stocks go up, U.S. price goes down. World stocks go down, U.S. price goes up. And here's what it looks like in the last 2 or 3 years. And so that those last 2 points are the forecast for 2020. World stocks go up, U.S. price this year will be lower than it was last year. Not the futures price, not the cash price you see now, but the marketing year average price that accounts for all the sales that have already taken place. The one that will determine whether you do or don't get a PLC payment. This is the part that's a little concerning. This is also a worst-case scenario, but USDA's current projection is these world stocks just continue to grow over the next 10 years. And that's why those long-term price forecasts don't ever go much above $5 a bushel, because these stocks continue to put pressure on U.S. prices. We need somebody to have a huge production issue that allows those stocks to drop significantly, and that's what can then raise the price in the U.S. The other thing that's a little disconcerting is USDA's forecasting our market share of world trade will go down over time from like almost 15% to 12 or 13%. The smaller our share of world trade, the less influence we have on world price. So Kansas could have a complete disaster, but hard red wheat prices are not going to react as they would if we represent a much larger percentage of world trade. The lower our percent of world trade, the lower a disaster locally will impact our price. The smaller the impact will be. This is a little disconcerting. The interesting thing is, it's not because U.S. exports are going down, they're going to grow. But that top bar, the one that's at the very top, that's Russia. So their market share grows a lot. The EU's market share grows a lot. Ukraine's market share grows. So our exports are going to go up according to this forecast, but at a slower pace than these competitors. And as that happens, they will have a larger influence on world prices, which means U.S. prices, than we will. So it's going to be important to maintain market share, and that goes back to the trade agreements. Vietnam, in my opinion, is a growth market. Right now, we are at a disadvantage trying to import to Vietnam because the TPP countries have preferential tariff treatment going into Vietnam. This is also a little concerning, but this is a few years out. This is USDA's current forecast of wheat price versus production costs. And you'll see in 2024, prices are below production. And by production, I just mean operating expenses. I'm not counting depreciation. I'm not counting fixed costs. I'm just talking about seed, fuel, fertilizer, and labor, really. Okay? So we really do need something to happen on the price side, because the cost side, we really don't have much control over. So the idea is costs will continue to increase as they have over the last 10 or 15 years. And if prices stay flat, we will reach a point 4 or 5 years out where even over operating costs, variable costs of putting the crop in the ground, we're going to have some challenges. So I probably shouldn't have finished on such a pessimistic slide, because I'm not really all that pessimistic, but it does suggest that there's some things that need to happen, move in our favor. Basically, farm profits in 2019 are about 10% higher than they were in 2018. That's really good news. But it's not true in every sector. And so it varies a lot, the sector you're looking at and the geography where you are. And what really matters is your access to an export market, and whether that export trader is trading with us or we're having conflict and we're doing less trade with them. Most commodities still face significant price pressure, and the pessimistic forecast is they will until there's something on the production side that can elevate prices, some sort of a reduction in overall stocks. That's not going to happen just from demand. We really need to have, especially in wheat and some of the other grains, some reductions in production relative to production capacity to have a big impact on these prices. Resolution of the trade disputes is really important, because what it did do is bring stability to the market. And I've said this before, even when we were in the middle of them. I almost didn't care what the resolution was. It just needed to be something that we all knew would be a set of rules that we could react to as we go through the next 2 or 3 crop years so we can adjust to them. So finally, I think we're kind of there, although I'm still very suspicious that the China Phase 1 will have the impact that some people are predicting.
Fortenberry reiterated his suspicions about the Phase 1 trade deal with China when I called and talked to him before producing this podcast. He mentioned the inflammatory rhetoric that is occurring between President Trump and President Xi, specifically President Trump's characterizing the coronavirus as the Chinese virus. Xi has not been pleased. Meanwhile, Xi has ejected U.S. reporters from China from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. I hope you enjoyed episode 172, or what I called the whys and wherefores of wheat prices. WSU economist Randy Fortenberry sets the scene, too. From his presentation at the Pacific Northwest Farm Forum held February 5th, 2020. Please join me here again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It.
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.